Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community. Plus a live Q&A, can't find anywhere else. It's September 25th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We are a DevOps accelerator for funded startups and enterprises that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help your startup launch better products faster. So how do you get started? Book a meeting with me directly. Just go to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions, and you'll have the opportunity to book a meeting with me directly. So how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is informal. Engage as much as you'd like. Ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. And for those of you on the recording, we host these calls live. So join us by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. So if you do find any portion of today's office hours valuable, you'll be able to find a recording of this session in our YouTube channel. We'll post it in a couple of hours, and that's a great way you can share it with your team. So with that said, let's get into some news and announcements. All right, first one. So I thought this one was really interesting, but let me make sure I got Matt here. Or I might defer this conversation a little bit. Yeah, why don't I skip this one for a second? Let me just see if he's joining us today, because I think it would be really interesting to have his take on it since we were just talking about this earlier on Office Hours last week. This is the STS tokens kind of for GitHub. All right, so we'll skip that one for the moment. Gonna move on to Tonka. So there's been a few of these JSONet solutions for deploying services to Kubernetes. Everyone is, you know, pretty Helm is the deployment system that everyone loves to hate, right? It's still probably the dominant ways apps are distributed, yet we are templating YAML, and that isn't maybe the best way of using YAML. So JSONet is an elegant way of expressing a language in just pure native JSON that will compile down to YAML or JSON as well. So they're using this as a way, as a, you know, like a framework almost for deploying to Kubernetes in a very dry manner. Anyone kick the tires on Tonka? Overall, looks interesting to me. I know some have dabbled with JSONet and Atmos. Atmos is our tool for defining configuration based in YAML. But yeah, you know, without some language aspects, YAML gets, you know, very large as well. So JSONet is interesting, but it is yet another language to learn, and it appeals to a pretty narrow set, I think, of developers on the whole. I do see Matt joined us, so let's talk about this one here. This was brought to my attention by RB in our community. I think it's really interesting. So last week, if you remember, one of the links I shared were all the different techniques that you could use to access GitHub repositories from your build pipelines. So let's say you have a build pipeline, you need to check out a Go module from a private source. Well, you have to jump through a lot of hoops to get that. And, you know, I said that I like the approach using netrc files together with git configs to rewrite git URLs and using GitHub tokens to access those repositories. The problem is You still have those GitHub tokens, and those are static, and those aren't easily rotated. And like GitHub should just provide this ability to have cross repo tokens, almost as easy as it is to use GitHub OIDC together with AWS, Azure, and GCP. There should be GitHub OIDC with GitHub. Well, turns out that somebody's implemented a GitHub app that more or less does this. We haven't evaluated it, haven't taken a look at it, but I thought it was really apropos that somebody shared just this this app when we were talking about it. Has anybody seen this Octo STS? Matt, I know you probably only saw it about 5 minutes ago, but does this seem to do or purport to do what I think it does?
I think so, but this also now requires that you have this app basically running somewhere, and it has to be installed with like God mode permissions on your repo or org or whatever. Like, I would much prefer this to be a GitHub native service that does this, but yeah, I think this is what is happening. Although, just briefly looking at it, I couldn't see. Oh, I see. There's a trust policy that you can check in. That's a YAML file, essentially. So you could right there. It was just right there, like in the middle. Trust policy can match the issuer subject and custom claims, basically. So, I guess in theory you could then use this to. Oh, but that's Google account. Yeah, I don't know if this will actually work for GitHub to GitHub. I think this will only work for like an OIDC provider, like to this, basically, like asserting its tokens. But I'd have to look deeper to see. Yeah, this part, so that's saying from Google accounts, but maybe you can still use it with the GitHub,
GitHub can be an OIDC provider, right? That's how SAML 2 works, right? They're hacking is in air quotes, like the GitHub OIDC model to do short-lived credentials.
yeah, but that's using your GitHub account, like not the temporary token that's issued inside of a GitHub action. So like that's a slightly different animal. So I'd have to dig deeper to see if this is actually doing what we think it's doing.
Got it. All right.
Yeah, I don't know why GitHub just doesn't do this themselves.
It'll be super cool. All right. Very minor announcement, only tangentially related to what we talk about here. But the CFO of HashiCorp has stepped down. Obviously, they've already IPO'd and, well, now presumably getting acquired by IBM. So they didn't make any announcement as to why he's stepping down, but my guess would be that as the acquisition moves closer, he's not going to become the CFO of IBM. So time for greener pastures. Again, that's just me reading between the lines. So big news this week to anybody using Arc. Incidentally, no, I am using Arc, and that's this browser that you've seen me on office hours use for the past year. Arc is a really awesome browser, like a modern reinterpretation of what a browser should feel like if your life revolved mostly around 1,000 SaaS apps or 1,000 different web apps. And rather than having a million apps installed on your machine, it would be nice if a browser just made using a lot of websites more convenient. And that's what Arc does. It's built on WebKit. It makes it very efficient to have lots of open tabs. It solves the whole problem about tab sprawl, if you will. I would constantly have 1,000 small little icons and barely be able to find anything when I used Chrome. Well, Coming with age of any product is some security tester or pen tester finding a way to do something you didn't intend to. And they found a way that they could exploit a very cool feature in Arc. So Arc has a lot of features. They have one feature called Boost that lets you kind of create a local copy of any site for archival purposes. They have another feature called Boost. Or did I say the same thing? Anyways, I think that the feature that was exploited here was the ability to customize any site that you want with JavaScript. Apparently, that opened up an opportunity that if you created a malicious site that assumed you were running in Arc, you could be able to run JavaScript under the Arc users session, browser session, and as a result of that, perform operations or basically, browser-based remote code execution. Michael or Matt? Yeah, that is accurate summary. So Arc handled this gracefully. They apologized profusely, fixed it promptly. This is, if you haven't updated Arc, do so. Arc does make that also very easy. So if you see the little nag in the lower left corner, click that and update. Anything else to add to this, or did I misrepresent anything, Michael?
No, I thought it was an interesting one. That especially how the author here kind of talks about their process going through it, how they did the kind of the enumeration of what the app's doing behind, found that there were some misconfigurations and that if you just host your own malicious JavaScript, and then update the creator ID to somebody else, then you can just run that script, on their remote browser. So I thought it was a pretty interesting one. And I think a lot of great things came out of it too. Like the team really responded well because the author here, I'm pretty sure they've just reached out to one of the co-founders via Slack. And after all of this, they're going to set up like a vulnerability program and some bug bounties, make it a little bit more accessible for people to report findings like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's only inevitable as the browser becomes more and more mainstream that these vulnerabilities will come out. So, anyways, this is par for the course for any browser. So I don't look negatively on them for it, and they handled it well. And if you've been curious, art curious, so to say, then definitely still check it out. It's really awesome. All right. Let's see, next announcement. Yeah, so one of the themes of Office Hours that I have is kind of bringing attention to open source. Open source is not free by any stretch of the imagination. Even if you're a user of open source, it costs you a tremendous amount of your time to use that open source and the maintainers as well for maintaining it, writing tests, responding to contributors and users of that open source. So an interesting survey went out to some 400 maintainers, and the stats show that a large majority of the maintainers are actually, truly graybeards or graying beards, and that trend is accelerating, and that there's a smaller number of, your 18 to 25 year olds maintaining open source at this stage, and that a lot of the open source maintainers feel additional pressure after the horrible incident with XZ, where they were basically played for a multi-year attack that ultimately led to a tremendous embarrassing I say backdoor placed into the XZ library. So, I'd be lying if that whole thing didn't scare me as well. Running an open source company, and open source, we can't afford strictly to do everything ourselves. So we rely on maintainers. Some of those maintainers are on this office hours, and a great deal of trust is necessary for that to work and to go into it. So this ties perfectly into the other post that was trending this week from Kelsey Hightower. How do we solve this problem? Well, there isn't a solution. There's not just one band-aid. It's going to be, a multi-pronged approach. There's got to be many ways to make this work. One of the light ways we're trying to make it work at Cloud Posse is really embracing GitHub sponsorships as a way for companies to give back financially to the very real financial cost of operating open source. But maybe another avenue would be finding a way that governments, and governments very much do rely on open source, to pay some, subsidize some of that open source development, especially the more and more dependent they are on it. So he doesn't, unfortunately, all of these posts, don't actually lay out the plan of how it would actually happen, but they do, I guess, plant the seeds of how it could work. Thoughts on this?
Thought it was an interesting tie-in with the Kelsey Hightower thing that who was it that we had a few weeks ago? Sweden, I think, mandated that like all government projects, or was it Switzerland? I don't remember now. Switzerland, or I couldn't remember. I knew it was an S. Yeah, that's it, Switzerland. So now they're basically requiring that it's like any software that's explicitly written for them is like released as open source. But it's in then the question becomes like who maintains that, and is this just making the problem worse like by trying to make it better? Like I get why they're saying that, but then I just wonder if like they've thought about the long-term implications of this and who maintains it. Like, I wonder if Switzerland believes that this is like some way to get free support forever rather than paying
Yeah.
for it as a government entity.
Hey, we made our source open source, so we're the good guys here. I think it's interesting. I mean, I think it makes sense that they do what they've done from a transparency perspective, also that it is subsidized by presumably taxpayer money. But in terms of expecting contributions back, I don't think that's just how the open source is going to work. There's a really interesting formula to get open source to work. And ultimately, it's gotta be for self-fulfilling reasons, right? That, hey, that's open. I can now take that software and use it myself. This proprietary system, whether it open source or not, I'm probably not gonna go run the government of Switzerland at my, office. So it doesn't directly benefit me that it's open source. But anyways, not a criticism, just observation. All right, so moving on from that, next topic was something that I'm 2 years behind the ball on. So I've known about Grafana on Call for a while. I just didn't realize that it was also open source. So that's pretty nice as an alternative to commercial offerings like PagerDuty and Opsgenie. I've heard great good things about OnCall, haven't used it firsthand, but now that I see that it's open source, yeah, curious. It'd be interesting if Amazon ever releases this as a managed offering together with Grafana Cloud. Has anybody, I'd be
You don't
curious
actually
if
mean
anybody's
Grafana Cloud, right? You mean Amazon's offering.
Well, Amazon's offering for AWS Managed Grafana is a collaboration with Grafana Labs. So I say Grafana Cloud, I meant Grafana Labs.
Got it. Yeah, because Grafana Cloud is actually like another standalone service, right?
Yeah,
That has
yeah,
all the stuff.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So yeah, I said that in an
And
awkward way. I meant it would be interesting if Amazon offers managed on-call for
yeah.
together with Grafana Labs.
The only reason I was making the distinction is because I believe this actually is available on Grafana Cloud. Like that's
Yeah.
where it first started. Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you know if it started open source or
I
did
don't
it
think so. I think it existed for like a year or so before they open sourced it.
Got it. Any users of OnCall have any positive or negative testimonials? Curious. All right. And next
Okay.
topic.
That's I just it might have even said it on there. I was just Googling it, but that was a third party product that Grafana acquired.
Oh.
It was like a mixer or something, AMIXR or something like that was the company that started it. So
Interesting.
they acquired it, brought it onto the cloud, and then eventually open sourced it.
Oh, I guess
Okay,
I
let's
missed
pick up.
this announcement. Wait, start moving from option. Just you can now move your option
Yeah,
from
I
option.
just heard about that from the guys today and seemed relevant.
Does this mean that they're going to be sunsetting eventually, Opsgenie, or?
Probably. I don't know. I really haven't read any of it yet. I just heard about it and looked up the link to post for you guys. But it sounds like there's a shakeup in the space in general, maybe.
Oh. Oh no, I think this is a different decommissioning.
I think that was the you can no longer self-host like a bunch of things for Atlassian. I think you can only run the cloud versions now.
All right, well, I'll be curious to learn more about that as it affects a lot of what we do since Opsgenie is one of our first class integrations with Terraform. But anyways, doesn't seem like it's affected at this time, but that they're going to be investing more and more into the JSM solution over Opsgenie, presumably. Cover that, cover that. So, if you are an open source maintainer, you probably were pinged by an email notifying you from a like bounty hunter type emails that we are inundated with, finding security vulnerabilities. And this one had a link to a domain, aptly named github-scanner.com. Which is a bogus, phishing domain. And this was disseminating well-known malware for finding for I guess exploiting Bitcoin wallets, among other things, was what I read. What I thought was interesting was well, so Michael here, weren't I think this was prompted by some of this was prompted by you, no?
Yeah, I got an email from them.
Yeah, and you opened up an issue with what organization was that?
Sans, they have the Internet
Sans,
Storm Center. Yeah, they do different malware analysis and research. So I forwarded it on to them and they took a more in-depth look at it.
yeah. So I think that's what a lot of this article is based on, maybe. But what was interesting about it was, look, we're technical users. We know that this doesn't sound like a CAPTCHA to me, but would my parents, well, now my parents wouldn't have gotten this email. And probably the technical audience mostly getting this email would probably know that this is not a CAPTCHA challenge. However, maybe some poor sap actually thought this was a CAPTCHA challenge and it was, hit basically Command R, then press Control V, then press Enter, and the result of that is you started a shell, you pasted in some vulnerability code, and ran it. And it is actually a CAPTCHA, just not the one you want to run. So I don't know. In my case, I saw the email come through. But by the time the issue had already been deleted by GitHub. And I mean, GitHub, this is not the first rodeo on GitHub that they see somebody abusing GitHub issue comments, or GitHub issues rather, to spam maintainers. But that's all I got. Anything else on this one, Michael, or others?
That was the first time I saw that technique. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read about this and I was like surprised at how gullible you'd have to be to fall for it.
Yeah. It does bring up something else, though, that bothers me, and I don't know if we've talked about it on office hours, is first of all, like, yeah, what was it now? A month or two ago, some security company wrote a post which was just ridiculous, so ill-informed, and made some wild accusations that, like, our Terraform null label was vulnerable, and you could do remote code execution with it. Turns out that the authors had no idea that there's a big difference between Terraform providers using vulnerable Go packages and Terraform modules that might not even use a provider at all, or be providerless, or use in this case, the null label. Anyways, in that case, the security researchers didn't use responsible disclosure, didn't, if you want, and I put researchers in air quotes. I think it was more just outsourced content mill that wrote this supposed security article. But there's a lot of these other kinds of emails that I get, or related things, from security researchers, and I put that in air quotes, because they're just using they're using this the reputation of legitimate security researchers, and who follow a certain degree of pedigree, or no, sorry, not pedigree, a certain degree of rigor, and have protocol for how to approach, pen testing, security disclosures, and so forth. And they're exploiting that process for capital gain, just using script kiddie tactics. They look, they, you know, they find, we found a critical security vulnerability on your site. You don't have DMARC enabled on such and such domain. We'd like to know how much your bounty is for this finding. And it's like, no, it's zero. You don't get points for just automating those kinds of and blasting out emails for those things. And I've seen similar kinds of just programmatic attempts to extract bounties like that, which I don't really appreciate. Any
I
thoughts on
get
this?
those. I
Yeah.
get those pretty regularly too, even on some of the open source repositories that I have out there. And a lot of times what it is, I've deployed like a couple of canary tokens. They're just like AWS canary tokens out there that actually look legitimate. And I've put them in a couple of repositories and I have researchers that reach out all the time and they're like, oh, we discovered this high severity, you have a API or you have a AWS secret key that's out there and I can access your environment. And I'm like, go ahead, run it again, and I'll like show you what I see from the other side. So just kind of funny.
Okay, I was going to say, just link them to a Rickroll video.
Yeah, honestly. But yeah, it's like you said, a lot of just programmatic script kiddie stuff, just trying to get a bounty.
And yeah, so anyways, what I don't like about it is, I think it minimizes the good work of the researchers really finding these vulnerabilities, like the ARC vulnerability we found earlier, and similar ones that were actually researched and sophisticated attempts. All right, next announcement. Just something, we've started using Clerk at Cloud Posse, and this caught my eye. It's a project backed by Y Combinator. It's supposedly a more or less drop-in for Clerk, as this that you can self-host as open source, and then there's the SaaS component of it, where you can subscribe and have it managed for you. With any of these projects, I would be, skeptical launching a product on a nascent open source project like this. But I don't know how long it's been around or if I was just late to the game.
And I mean, the vast majority of people are using Clark and the like so that they don't have to worry about hosting their own authentication pieces because it's, while getting it up and running, quote unquote, is usually pretty easy. Keeping it secure over time and making sure you don't make stupid mistakes in your auth process is one of the hardest things in web development. So there's a few, there's a few players in this market, now, but I'm a little skeptical about like just host it yourself.
I think that's all my announcements for today, if I can find my mouse. There it is. Oh no, one last a goodie here. Not ready for prime time, somebody's weekend project, but I thought it was an interesting implementation. So, as you might be aware, if you're a Terraform user, backend is required to store state, especially in a collaborative environment. And there are multiple different backends. By and large, if you're on AWS, you're using probably S3, a combination of S3 and DynamoDB. And if you're on Azure or any of the other clouds, you're using some similar object store. Maybe if you're on GitLab, you're using their backend, or if on Terraform Cloud, you have theirs. Well, there's a very simple backend interface via HTTP that defines how you can create an HTTP endpoint for any Terraform state, and that endpoint can implement locking. So somebody's done that with a simple TypeScript app deployed to Cloudflare workers, leveraging what is it, R2 on the backend. Which is Cloudflare's cost-effective S3 alternative. So I thought it was interesting, if for no other reason, that it shows, what an end-to-end implementation like this would look like. I'm not sure how the auth piece is handled, for example, or how that works, and that's always one of the complicated parts of it. The other thing, if I didn't mention, it does support, they've implemented locking in it as well. So I'm wondering if that's using any of the lock semantics of R2, or if they're using like the one of the KV storage systems on Cloudflare to do that.
The one thing that I'll just say, I've explored this for numerous reasons, as you know, in trying to figure this out. And the one problem that they have is that, so all these providers here use like the generic, HTTP backend. That's how they actually get like implemented in, or how they get configured in Terraform. And the problem with that is that it only supports basic auth. So you essentially have to establish a username and password that you pass in, usually with like the TF underscore like username and I think it's TF underscore password or something like that, environment variables when you run it essentially. So that you have to authenticate to the back end with a username and password. There's no way of getting around that because they don't let you like. I don't understand why backends aren't in the plugin ecosystem, just like everything else. But well, I do understand because then it would be much easier for people to compete with Terraform Cloud. But they technically belong in the plugin ecosystem like everything else, so that you could have pluggable backends that you can then support your own authentication mechanisms like auth tokens or something along those lines. But so I was just I'm purely just responding to you weren't sure how auth works.
Yeah, no, good point. And obviously, if you're doing anything the right way with it, your S3 backend, it's just using whatever roles you've assumed through SSO or SAML, etc. And it's secure, therefore, by virtue of IAM and how that works. Now, yeah, basic auth is a far cry from IAM, and there's no con it, I don't see how any sort of dynamic short-lived credentials would be practically implemented using something like this. So you're back to, yeah, static credentials and state, which isn't a great thing.
Yeah, not without some other process that interjects like a way to get those like temporary credentials. Like in theory, you could have an endpoint in your in your backend that issues you a short-lived credential, but then you need some way to call that out of band from Terraform to get the temporary token to then be able to use, to access your credentials. I mean, to access your backend.
What I thought you were going to say was the issue, like, when we looked into doing something like this through Vercel or whatnot, were just the limits on actual request bodies. And I'm guessing Cloudflare Workers has similar, but I'm not seeing what the request body, maximum request body size is. But if you can only use one meg.
I think it's 1 meg, yeah.
A worker can be a size, no, that's the size of like the actual TypeScript, no?
Could be.
This is with tunnels, though. Anyways, not clear. Just curious. One of the considerations to look into if you do go implementing your own Terraform state backend on a managed service.
Oh, the Cloudflare has network-wide limits on the request body size. The limit is tied to your Cloudflare account's plan, which is separate from your workers plan. So 100 megs. It could be 100 megs, 200 megs, or 500 megs, depending if you're using free pro business or enterprise.
So totally reasonable for
Yeah.
a Terraform state file.
Yeah.
All right, any announcements that we missed today? All right, let's move into Q&A. Any oh, there we are, that one. Any Q&A, any questions that we can get answered today?
I've been having a hell of a time with OAuth 2 proxy, getting that configured correctly. Despite following the directions multiple times, I'm just not having any luck. So if anyone has a kind of a config Helm values file that they're using to do it with Google or tcloak or whatever, if you want to genericize it and send it to me, that'd be awesome.
We have something very old. This is before the project was like rehomed, but maybe the config options haven't changed too much.
Yeah, or an alternate. I mean, I tried Vouch as well and had the same problem. So like I'm clearly like stuck on something involving OpenID or OAuth 2. I'm not doing something right. I haven't been able to figure it out. So I was curious if anyone had a working config that I could peek at. I guess that leads to the other question, which is, do people prefer OAuth 2 proxy or Vouch or something else altogether? Has everyone just, fallen into using Okta?
Yeah, I mean, you have the obviously you have the commercial offerings. You have Cloudflare's Access product, and Teleport can do similar things, but those are commercial. Posting this in the Zoom chat here. I was going to say, oh, this just came up again yesterday, and the two that if I were going about it again. That I would look at that I see come up the most often are Pomerium and Oathkeeper. Have you looked at either of those?
I was successfully using Pomerium a couple
two companies ago, and it was fine. It was great. But I've noticed it seems like it's fallen out of favor compared to OAuth 2Proxy. But yeah, maybe I should just fall back to that one.
That's interesting because I kind of wrote off OAuth 2Proxy when it was abandoned, but and then rehomed. I forget to which company took over it temporarily, and then now it moved into its own organization. Now this has been years ago, so I guess if OAuth 2Proxy is in good health and stewardship, makes
Yeah,
sense to me.
there are commits 2 days ago to OAuth 2Proxy. I was just looking at that myself.
I mean, I'm kind of going off of, looking at Ingress and NGINX documentation. It's like, here, how to do authentication, and it recommends OAuth 2Proxy or Vouch, and I'm like, okay, cool. It doesn't mention Pomerium. That's fine, whatever. Pomerium kind of got a little bit more complex than I wanted it to. At one point, I was using Pomerium before it switched to having its own Ingress, and then it had some major update where they decided that Pomerium is its own separate Ingress entirely, and it kind of got more complex, and I hadn't, I had moved away from that company at that point.
Yeah. So the other one was Oathkeeper, that it was on my radar as well. We talked about it, but I'm not sure how it compares these days then to OAuth 2Proxy.
I'll take a look at the old home file you've got there, and we'll see if that helps out. Good luck to me.
Great. Any other questions we can get answered today? Let's see. Hey, Michael, go for it.
Yeah, sorry about that. It was taking me a second to get to my microphone. I'm just wondering if I mean, in this community we use Slack for a lot of communication. And I'm just wondering what the group's experience is with other collaboration platforms like Discord and or Microsoft Teams. And I guess Teams would be like in a more enterprise environment, specifically with platform integrations like Jira, GitHub, Terraform Enterprise, if you're using that. I like Slack integrations just come naturally to me, but I'm just trying to wrap my head around integrations on other platforms and just wonder if folks have experience with that.
I'd be especially interested to hear from any, I mean this in the nicest way, contrarians not using Slack, who love Teams for their integration, who love Discord for their integrations. I'd really be curious to hear those stories as well.
Yeah, because I mean, I honestly don't think of any. I can't think outside of Slack, so I'm trying to address my, I don't know, bias, naivety,
Blind
ignorance, whatever
spot.
you want to call it. Just to kind of get a, I mean, I know that stuff is there, like the things you can do in Slack, you can do on all these other platforms. I'm just wondering, like, what's it look like, or how's it feel, compared to what I kind of know and experience on Slack. And maybe that's just something, to marinate on, and we circle back to it, but
And we self-select here. We use Slack to
yeah,
communicate
exactly.
with our SweetOps community and Cloud Posse. I think that adds a bias automatically. But
Yeah,
I
but
was entertaining for a hot minute, what we should do with our Slack community, and when Slack decided to change the history retention period for free teams, gave me pause. And I was thinking about maybe using Discord, but I thought it would just be too disruptive in the end. And with the archive solutions out there, I think that, addresses the biggest pain point there.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to bring up is that, Discord, The server has webhooks available, so you can basically send anything in you want through a webhook. Obviously, that's more roll it yourself or DIY. It's not as pretty as a lot of the integrations that come with Slack. But they do actually have like a an app concept where they have Discord apps that can do various things like that. But they are much more like the, I always go back to like Chef and Puppet, how they had their marketplaces out there, and you would find really good quality versions and you would find really, crappy quality versions. And I find in the Discord app marketplace, you get kind of a mix of that. If you happen to stumble on someone who wrote a really good version of something, they have a good, a good quality version of it. But if you don't, you could easily get like a crappy version that doesn't work really well. And there are no like official, there's no official Jira plugin or Jira app for Discord, but there are a few people who have written Jira notifier apps for Discord. And your mileage may vary depending on how detailed the person was who wanted to tackle that problem. It's not usually being tackled by the enterprises themselves, like Slack seems to be. It's much more like community driven, and they're all over the place as terms of quality goes.
I think part of the challenge is that usage of other solutions like Teams, I don't think is always often driven. I think it's often driven more just by having a subscription to Microsoft Office and getting that in there for free. Just like the companies using maybe Google Meet for meetings do so because they're already bought into Google workspaces. I think Slack fits a demographic that isn't bought into maybe one or either of those, or prefer it to be separate.
Yeah, and then Discord obviously came up through like gamers essentially like wanting to have their own servers where they could chat and do all those kinds of things. So it definitely did not start as like an enterprise focused thing. So it's got a lot fewer of those enterprisey features that a lot of us have come to rely on in Slack.
Still looks a lot like Slack, though.
It does. They've redone it a few times, like the look and feel on it over the years. So, all right,
I mean,
it's
when you.
I'm sure it was inspired by that, but the missions were different when they started.
They certainly were, but to me, they're pretty equivalent in terms of function.
Yeah, the interesting part for me between Slack and Discord, like my kids, when I show them what I'm doing on Slack, they're like, "Oh, this is like Discord." And then the first time I saw Discord, I was like, "Oh, this is like Slack." So it's like we were both in our own sort of parallel universes.
I think the big difference between the two would be what you can find in the ecosystem, right? Slack has a lot of interesting bots for channel management, rowdy crowds. There's just I think the plugins and the ecosystem, the things that you'll find there are different for both of them.
Let's not forget the phenomenal Zoom Workplace app, which incorporates chat, soon document processing, the Zoom streaming that you know and love. Say this facetiously.
I once decided to come up with a number of how many of these kinds of applications I may have touched over my career. And I got to about 100. Think about
Including
old
like
things like
MSN,
IRC,
Skype, yeah, IRC.
PowWow, Dialpad.
CompuServe for the win.
There you go.
Yeah, AOL Messenger. Well, that's
AOL
AIM.
Messenger, Facebook Messenger,
HipChat. Yeah, we're doing pretty well.
WhatsApp. There are many, 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 many. And these are well-known ones, right? I think Google has released about 10 of them.
And sunset them.
And they've never talked to each other either. Yeah.
No, they, well, Hangouts and chat did talk to each other, but that was the only case.
All right. Any other questions we can get answered today? We have about 10 minutes left. Hey, go for it, Elvis.
Yeah, I saw you post about the Git runner, self-hosted Git runner. So how do you guys allocate space, especially those Docker builds that are occupying a lot of space when you download artifacts and all that?
One of the first things you encounter after, like in the problem solution cycle, I'd like to say, getting your runners up easy. The next problem you have is scaling them. So then you start coming up with Carpenter pools and for your different profiles. And then the next problem you have after that is you run out of IP space. So you increase your VPCs. And then now your next problem you have, because you've been running enough workloads, is that the root file systems are filling up because you didn't mount a separate EBS volume to your runners. And yeah, that's the gist of it, is mounting a large